Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, February 6th. Nearly 8 inches of snow blankets Midland. Weather shuts down schools and airport by Stuart Doreen. Midlanders anticipated snowfall and Mother Nature delivered it in a big way. Those wanting to build a snowman or see the first major snowfall in more than 4 years woke up to a winter wonderland as snow covered the city Wednesday morning. The National Weather Service reported that 5.4 inches had fallen at Midland International Airport from Tuesday night through 7 a.m. Wednesday. By noon, that total climbed to 7.4 inches. The NWS climate report for Wednesday showed 5.7 inches, which tied for the sixth most in one day in Midland's recorded history. The report also showed 7.9 inches, going back to Tuesday evening, less than 24 hours before the first snowflake fell. Midland schools and government entities were closed on Wednesday. That included Midland ISD, Trinity, Midland Christian, and Midland College. What was left was the snow, wind, chills in the teens, and the overwhelming task of keeping the damage to a minimum. The Texas Department of Transportation reported early Wednesday that all roads are open at this time, but Interstate 20 at the Cap Rock between Monahans and Panwell has very limited mobility due to the incline and trucks not being able to climb it. TxDOT also reported that there weren't any major crashes, but many minor ones. By 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, Odessa police reported 35 weather-related calls since Tuesday evening, mainly crashes and motor assist calls. As of 2 p.m., Encore showed 5 separate power outages in Midland impacting 45 customers. As of 2:45 p.m., Midland Police and Fire responded to 10 minor accidents and 16 stalled vehicles. On Wednesday morning, the city announced Midland International Airport was closed until 5 p.m. Thursday. But the airport reopened about 6:30 p.m. Wednesday because, according to the city's spokeswoman, conditions have drastically improved this afternoon. The additional snow forecasted for this afternoon didn't materialize in the quantities anticipated. The airport is now open. Also Wednesday, the Midland Rockhounds baseball team announced the cancellation of the West Texas Sports Banquet, which was scheduled for Wednesday night at Midland Country Club. The Broadway musical Jersey Boys at the Wagner Newell Performing Arts Center took place as scheduled. The National Weather Service reported that the winter storm warning ended at 6 p.m. Wednesday, and its forecast calls for a thawing out to take place today, with sunny skies and a high around 41 degrees. While the forecast shows improvement, educational entities were taking no chances. On Wednesday afternoon, they followed each other in canceling classes for a second straight day. The water on the roads, low temperatures around 12 degrees, wind chills in single digits, and the threat of black ice was even to call for another inclement weather day. Midland, Greenwood, Ector County, and Coahoma ISDs all reported classes were canceled for Thursday, as Midland Christian, Trinity, Hillcrest, St. Anne's, Midland College, and the University of Texas of the Permian Basin. Midland ISD also stated in a press release that all extracurricular activities scheduled for Thursday are also canceled. In the event of winter weather, the decision to cancel or open schools is made the night before a potential closure. The MISD statement read, "This allows students, parents, and employees the ability to plan ahead instead of waiting for an early morning decision." Designated central office administrators have consulted with area weather and roads experts and have determined that anticipated early morning icy road conditions pose a risk to drivers. Parents will receive notification informing them of the cancellation. Opinion from the MRT for Thursday. Our views. Calling off classes early was the right call. We want to thank Midland ISD and other education entities for making the decision to call off school ahead of the wintry weather that blanketed the area. There were some doubting Thomases who questioned the need for the decision to be made so early, but by making the decision Tuesday evening instead of Wednesday morning, people had plenty of time to prepare for an honest-to-goodness snow day. Another reason we wanted to throw a shout-out to MISD leadership was because of the responsibility that comes with being the educator of 26,000-plus students. When it comes to inclement weather situations, that responsibility actually extends beyond MISD's boundaries. There are schools in Midland that make their respective decisions based on what MISD does. So MISD leadership making the decision Tuesday also benefited families of other schools. The decision shouldn't be something people take lightly. On days such as Wednesday, the fewer people who are out on the roads, the safer it is for everyone. The Reporter-Telegram understands better than most that not all of Midland can shut down when there is snow on the ground. But we appreciate the responsibility required when it comes to making decisions that affect thousands. We would like to think that the decision is an easy one, but it's not. Even Tuesday night, some social media warriors took to Facebook with complaints about the early decision to cancel school on Wednesday. To those people, we say all the best indicators were that snow was coming and it was better to be safe than sorry. Better safe than sorry. It is a little troubling to read the complaints about what Midland has or doesn't have when the once-in-a-four-year snow event takes place. We read the comments about how Midland should have a fleet of trucks and snow plows ready to go, clearing all the roads and the airport runways. It reminds us of the comments when it rains. People complain that Midland doesn't have drainage systems like other cities, most of which get more rain. We believe Midland is what it is. Do we really want to buy snow removal equipment for the snowstorms that occur maybe once every 1,500 days? If you believe so, go to the next Midland City Council meeting and speak up during the open comment session at the end of the meeting. If you ask us, that money would be better spent on more machines used to fill potholes and employing more personnel to repair our streets. We hope Midlanders remain aware of their surroundings and take caution when the conditions call for it. When it rains, avoid the typical areas that flood or wait for the water to recede. Do that, and Midlanders will avoid having to spend the millions of dollars required to update our roads with the drainage seen in other cities. As for the snow, it took us much longer to get to work on Wednesday, but we got there. During our drive, we noticed other drivers were cautious as well. We appreciate their respect for the roads and their fellow Midlanders. Death notices from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, February 6. Bernardo F. Natividad, 38, of Midland, passed away Monday, February 3. Services are pending with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. He is survived by his wife, Aracima Natividad, one son, Jesus Natividad, two daughters, Valerie Natividad and Natalie Natividad, his parents, Leonardo and Irma Natividad, and two brothers and one sister. Darlene Bristow Caffey, 82, of Stanton, passed away early Sunday morning, February 2, at her home. The family will receive friends from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursday, February 6th, at Gilbreth Funeral Home in Stanton. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, February 7th, at First Baptist Church, Stanton. Burial will follow at Evergreen Cemetery. Robert Mitchell Martin. A memorial service will be held Saturday, February 8th, at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland at 2 p.m. Tommy Albert Thomas, 76, of Midland, passed away Monday, February 3rd. A memorial service will be Friday, February 7th at 11 a.m. at Cotton Flat Baptist Church. He is survived by his wife, Vicki L. Thomas, two sons, Mickey Dwayne Thomas and Gregory Shane Thomas, one daughter, Donna LaRue Holman, and 10 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren. Cruz and Cornyn joined successful effort to acquit President Trump by Abby Livingston, Texas Tribune. Texas two Republican senators, John Cornyn and Ted Cruz, voted with a majority of their chamber to acquit President Donald Trump of 2 articles of impeachment on Wednesday. The final vote, 52-48, to acquit, after a Senate trial in which there was little question about the outcome from the start. U.S. Senator Mitt Romney, Republican Utah, was the sole Republican to join all Democrats in voting in favor of convicting Trump. Both Texans, who were each prominent lawyers before joining the Senate, served as jurors in a process with little past precedent to follow, and cloaked themselves with inscrutability as they listened to legal arguments over the president's fate. But outside the chamber, they deployed their training to defend the president to the public and left little doubt where they stood on the matter. House Democrats charged Trump in December with abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. The first charge was rooted in a series of testimony over the fall that alleged the president pressured Ukrainian leadership to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden in exchange for U.S. military aid that Congress had previously appropriated. The second charge came about as the White House refused to allow a number of presidential advisors to testify before the House. Rather than litigate for months, if not years, over the enforcement of subpoenas, the House moved forward and sent the impeachment articles to the Senate in mid-January for trial. Cornyn and Cruz similarly voted with nearly all of their GOP conference to oppose testimony from new witnesses before the Senate, and in the process they served as fierce defenders of the president and his actions. For Cornyn, the impeachment trial came as he gears up for his 4th U.S. Senate campaign, but it also served as a reminder for how closely he is aligned with Senate leadership. Once the second-ranking Republican senator, internal term limit rules forced Cornyn to step down from that post last year. But even without the title, there is little question over his proximity to U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and Cornyn emerged over the last month as the leading spokesman for the party in interviews with reporters on social media and in television appearances. His commentary was pointed. He frequently defended Republican positions on rules and taunted Democrats, mostly U.S. Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and the senators running for president, who were forced to stay in Washington amid the lead-up to the Iowa Democratic caucuses. Cruz, once the bombastic black sheep within the Senate Republican Conference, has spent the last year or so as a quieter presence around the halls of the Capitol. Chastened from a second-place finish to Trump in the 2016 GOP nomination fight, and a shocking near loss to former U.S. Representative Beto O'Rourke, Cruz kept a lower profile of late at the U.S. Capitol. But impeachment brought out the old Cruz, the intellectual swagger, the frequent trips to microphones to speak to reporters, and surprisingly, as the host of the top podcast in the country, a daily podcast on the proceedings that reached number one on the iTunes charts. Democrats frequently underscored that the man Cruz so vigorously defended once insulted the appearance of Cruz's wife and falsely accused his father of participating in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. U.S. Representative Sylvia Garcia, Democrat, Houston, was the Democrat with the most up-close view of how the state's two senators handled themselves over the process. Day in, day out, for nearly 3 weeks, she sat at the front of the chamber in her capacity as a House impeachment manager. Effectively a Trump prosecutor, it was her role to appeal to a chamber of Senate jurors, including her home state senators. Inside the room, both men were subdued. Cruz frequently scribbled on a legal pad and listened while leaning back in his desk chair toward the rear of the room. Cornyn sat close to the front in a nod to his seniority. He listened closely, often with a furrowed brow. "I do try to make contact," Garcia told reporters last week, "but frankly, they're very hard to read." Garcia, a former municipal court judge, noted Cornyn's past on the bench and described him as wearing a poker face that was the same sort of demeanor and posture when he's listening as I do. She found Cruz even more inscrutable. "They both seem to be listening," she added. "I've not seen them take a lot of notes. I'm hopeful that we can persuade one of them, but it's doubtful." The state Democratic Party seized on the vote, with Cornyn's re-election in mind. Throughout this entire impeachment process, complicit John Cornyn showed his true colors, said Texas Democratic Party spokesman Abi Rahman. "Every opportunity he's had to do his job and stand up for Texans and our Constitution, he's instead stood up for McConnell and Trump. Texans see right through John Cornyn and ready to send him home in November." The senators' votes to acquit could prove to be among the most notable votes of their careers. Or like every other extraordinary development of the Trump era, who did what during impeachment could fade into the background as the next drama takes hold. Cruz will not face voters for another 5 years. Cornyn, however, is on the ballot in November. Most political handicappers project that he is a safe bet for re-election. But on the heels of Cruz's close finish in 2018 and the overall political turbulence in the ether, even Cornyn cranked the alarm last year to his fellow Texas Republicans. It's an open debate among political operatives over whether impeachment will be a top issue in November. At one point during a debate over rules, Cornyn urged his followers and Senate colleagues to litigate Trump's removal in November rather than throw him out of office now. "Save the rest for 2020 election," he wrote. Hello, this is Cindy reading Weekender, your guide to events in the Permian Basin, from the MRT for Thursday. Midland Festival Ballet takes Leap Forward with Iconic by Rich Lopez. Midland Festival Ballet is bringing something different to the stage this year. The company is foregoing its traditional performance in April of signatures such as Swan Lake or Giselle. Instead, MFB will present on Saturday Iconic, in which classical and contemporary come together. I know Susan was interested in pushing the company to do new and professional repertoire, Executive Director Rachel Kerr Ritter said. "It is really a different type of show, and I think it will be really fun." Susan Clark, Artistic Director of MFB, is the instructor who leads the company through its choreography and performances. Iconic will take audiences from its more traditional roots to some contemporary country music in a four-part performance. The show begins with Act Two of Swan Lake, featuring special guest dancers Arian Molina Soco and Daisy Torriente of Pennsylvania Ballet in the roles of Odette and Prince Siegfried, with the Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale performing the music. The performance moves into the Arensky Dances, a neoclassical work by former Atlanta Ballet director Robert Barnett, who Clark worked with previously. The dancers will be accompanied by a trio of musicians on stage. The third movement is a premiere piece choreographed by Kedia Garza to music by Arturo Marquez. Danzon moves between neoclassical and contemporary ballet with roots in Latin music. The final piece puts Midland Festival Ballet in some new territory. The dancers will perform to select songs by Johnny Cash, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Laurie McKenna, and Robert Earl Keen, performed by local band Angel and the Bad Men. Pearl Walmsley was inspired after seeing them play live, and she choreographed this ballet, which shares the range of what ballet can be, Kerr Ritter said. It's been really interesting watching them work through this. The band, which has been together for about 2 years, took a break from working on its first album to venture into the world of dance for the piece, You Say, The Party Never Ends. We didn't know at all what to expect combining our music with this style of dancing, but this experience has been one of the coolest things we've gotten to be a part of so far, singer Angela Porter said in an email. Pearl and Susan took a big chance combining these two arts, and it is a spectacular combination. The choreography is amazing, and the dancers and staff have been such a joy to work with. We can't wait for Saturday's performance. Eschewing its more traditional shows for Iconic, Kerr Ritter sees this show as a potential gateway for those who haven't experienced ballet. I really get people who tell me they are excited to see Swan Lake or they want to see the band. People may not know what to expect, but I think that this production is a great introduction to any new audience members, she said. If you go, Iconic, 7:30 p.m. Saturday, Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market Road, 1788, $10 to $49. On the net, MidlandFestivalBallet.org. The Women of Lockerbie brings tragedy and healing to stage, by J.C. Lewis. Odessa College Assistant Professor of Drama Kendall Kiker was looking for a play to do in the Black Box Theater, which is more intimate than the Globe of the Southwest. He chose The Women of Lockerbie. The Women of Lockerbie is a dramatization based around the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 in 1988, Kiker said. The play takes place 7 years later in Lockerbie at an annual memorial service for the families that come in. Kiker said the play revolves around two storylines. One is a set of parents, the Livingstons, who lost a son in the crash, and he was one of the victims that his body was never found, he said. We see the mother, Madeline, really struggling to deal with this loss even 7 years later, and how that has affected her marriage with her and her husband, Bill. The other storyline is about the laundry project the Women of Lockerbie undertook to help grieving families find closure, he said. What happened was several of the women in Lockerbie wanted to take the clothing of the victims to wash it, fold it, and then have it returned to the families of the victims to help with closure, he said. They were met with pretty harsh resistance by the American government. We see that struggle between some of the women in Lockerbie and the one government agent working in Lockerbie. The play was written by Deborah Brevoort, who structured it to resemble a Greek tragedy, Kiker said. We have a chorus of women who at times speak to themselves, and other times they speak to the audience, he said. In the true spirit of a Greek tragedy, they help push the story along and fill the audience in on what has happened, while also commenting on things that are happening. Anna Miguel, a freshman theater major at OC, plays Madeline Livingston. She said her interest in theater started when her sister was in high school and taking theater classes. She said she saw what her sister was doing and wanted to pursue the same path. I just kind of fell in love with it, she said. My sophomore year at Permian High School, I branched out to other theaters nearby. She has done shows at the Permian Playhouse with a Kaleidoscope company, and last semester she was the stage manager for A Doll's House. She said she wanted to start with theater at a small school. I wanted to work up my resume and get my feet in slowly, Miguel said. I knew Kendall was new, and I liked what he was doing in this program. It was something that I was going to be comfortable in. Her character is a grieving mother who is introduced by wandering the hills of Lockerbie, Scotland, at night. She is a grieving mother who lost her son 7 years ago and is still unable to cope with it, Miguel said. Her grief got so much stronger than when she was back in New Jersey. Her part is really trying to find peace and comfort. For the women of Lockerbie, she said she had to do extra research. I have had to do a lot of research with this part, which has been more sad than other research I have done for characters, she said. The play is being performed in the Black Box to show that the college has this other space, Kiker said. For some of the shows that have smaller casts and are a bit more intimate in nature, we do have that close, intimate proximity to the audience. We could easily do this show over in the Globe, but there would be a lot of separation from actors and audience. Where in this show we are sitting here in the front row of seating, and we will have actors a few inches from us, he said. We were looking to add a third show. We wanted something that wasn't going to have a very big cast, and that we felt would easily lend itself to this space and be able to work here. Our new technical director, Amanda Klipsch, had mentioned this show. It was one that I had heard the title of but didn't know much about. Kiker said that every show has its own challenges. There is no permanent seating, no set or light system, he said. We had to bring all of that over and figure out how we were going to orient things in here to make everything work. We lost an actor pretty late in the process, so we had to rearrange things. It has been a really good learning process as well. I think it is another way to see just what we can do here at the theater program at Odessa College. Kiker said the public should come out to the play to not only experience a play in the Black Box, but to understand times of tragedy and the need for closure. On a personal note, I was talking to one of our culinary arts professors. We were chatting about this show, Kiker said. He said, it is kind of sad how we mark our lives by the tragedies we experience. Unfortunately, there are so many tragedies along the way that we tend to forget about some of them. If you go, The Women of Lockerbie, 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and 2 p.m. Sunday. Tickets are $5 for military and people 65 and older, and $7 for adults. Tickets are free for OC students, staff, and faculty. Drew Fish celebrates album release at Rockin' Rodeo by Rich Lopez. Although country singer Drew Fish will officially release his new album, Wishful Drinkin', on Friday, he celebrates the release with his show tonight at Rockin' Rodeo. He has been performing the tracks for about a year already because the plan was to have the album out a year ago. Yeah, we were a little behind schedule, he said in a phone interview. There were some studio issues and schedules couldn't get lined up, so everything took longer than it should. In the meantime, he dropped some singles as a ramp-up to the release date. This worked in his favor. The song Better Place reached number one on regional charts. Don't You Know was a top five single. That didn't undermine the album's release because he had an ace up his sleeve when announcing the new record. This album has my first duet and my first waltz. I'll be singing with Pam Tillis on my album. I mean, she has a Grammy, a CMA award, he said. We didn't want to announce Pam on the album right up until the last moment before going to press. Fish's song was given to Tillis' manager, and when she heard it, she was on board. He flew to Nashville from Houston to record the track. Now Fish and his band are in celebration mode with a slew of concerts entered on the new album. This new record still shows the diversity of who we are. No song sounds the same, but it all sounds like us, he said. If you go, Drew Fish Band, 10 p.m. today. Rockin' Rodeo, 4400 North Big Spring Street, $8. Online, rockinrodeomidland.com. Heat Index. Today, History Lesson. Midland College opens the new exhibit, World War I Lessons and Legacies, with a lecture at noon in the Faskin Learning Center. The poster exhibit explores the war's impact on American life and how its legacy has influenced modern life. MC will host a schedule of lunchtime lectures throughout spring. The exhibit will be on display through August 31st. Friday, Sweet Tooth. Get an early start on Valentine's sweets with the annual fundraiser Chocolate Decadence at the Horseshoe Pavilion. The event is hosted by and benefits the West Texas Aphasia Center, which produces services and resources for stroke survivors and their families. This year, the event throws back to classic 1970s television with its theme, The Love Boat, A Valentine's Voyage. Whether you don your cruise wear, your disco outfit, or just some snazzy cocktail attire, the fundraiser will offer activities befitting of a cruise with photo booths, shuffleboard, roaming magician, and of course dinner, and a bevy of chocolate desserts. 6 p.m. on the net, aphasiawtx.org. Saturday, Moonlighting. The Museum of the Southwest and Drama Art team up for some nighttime stretching. The Blakemore Planetarium at MSW will host Blakemore After Dark Snow Moon Yoga. The class will be held in the planetarium's newest feature, Science on a Sphere, which will illuminate the space for all the poses and stretches. 6 p.m., $15. Roll on by. Lace up those skates and hit the rink with the whole family. Every Sunday, Casey's Nutty Roller hosts family night from 2 to 5 p.m. and then from 7 to 9 p.m. Rent either regular quad skates or inline skates for a family fun time together. MOSC Quintet No. 1, performed by West Texas Winds, Sunday, February 9th, 3 p.m., First United Methodist Church, Midland, 300 North Main Street, Midland, Danzy Wind Quintet and B. Durr, Opus 56, No. 1, Francais Quintet, No. 1, Ricciardi Quintet, No. 1, for Winds in D Major, Opus 124, MOSC.org, phone 800-514-3849, or at the door, $15 general admission, students free. Shower guest questions need for giving bride a second gift. Dear Abby for Thursday. Dear Abby, my niece on my husband's side was engaged to be married 2 years ago. There was a bridal shower and everyone gave gifts or gift cards. 2 weeks after the shower, the wedding was canceled because of the groom-to-be's infidelities. The shower gifts and gift cards were never returned, nor was anyone reimbursed. The same niece is getting married to someone else now. Another shower is being given for her. Everyone on her side of the family is invited. Are we required to give gifts again? Can we attend the shower and not give a gift? Should we all just not attend? Please help. Already gave once. Dear Already Gave, any unopened gift from the first shower should have been returned to the givers. Because they weren't, you are not obligated to give the bride another gift. However, if you plan to attend this shower, in my opinion, you should not go empty-handed. Dear Abby, last week I was in my college's cafe, minding my own business and studying for a test. I looked toward a group of guys that hang out there and made eye contact with a guy friend I've known since preschool. He made his way to my table, sat down, and we started talking about classes and whatnot. Suddenly, he changed the subject and asked me if I was seeing anyone. I said no, and he blurted out that he's in love with me. He said he has loved me for a very long time, and I am perfect in his eyes, and that I'm too harsh and doubt myself. Then he said he wants me to give him a chance. The thing is, I don't like him that way and never have. He's not the type of guy I'm attracted to. How do I go about rejecting him without losing him as a friend? Friend Zone in Washington State. Dear Friend Zone, tell him the truth, that you like him too, but only as a friend, and hope he will find someone soon who can reciprocate his romantic feelings. He may not like the message, but he will respect you for your honesty and for not wasting his time. Dear Abby, I have many older friends, and when we go out for lunch or dinner, all they talk about is their aches and pains and other medical stuff. I will always be their friends and support them, but sometimes it's such a downer. They even get depressed listening to each other. What's the best way to change the conversation to happy subjects while being sensitive at the same time? Happy subjects only. Dear Happy, older people sometimes dwell on their aches and pains and other medical stuff because they have little else to occupy their minds. If you are sensitive, you will listen sympathetically for a period of time, then propose you all change the subject to something more upbeat and suggest something. Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Thursday, February 6th. Snow and ice brought accidents and closings. Shelter houses homeless during extreme weather by Michael Merlot. Snow and ice hit Odessa in a big way with up to 5 inches of the seldom seen white stuff landing all over the Permian Basin. Schools shut down as well as Midland International Air and Spaceport on Wednesday, and law enforcement was kept busy with accidents around town due to ice. With temps expected with a low of 32 and high of 48 today, motorists could be in for more slipping and sliding. A number of businesses also shut down on Wednesday. Visit OAOA.com for an updated list of any closings predicted for Thursday. Texas Department of Transportation Communications Director Gene Powell on Wednesday discouraged travel in the 12-county Odessa district. Many roads were treated, but others were snow and ice packed. The extreme weather also impacted the homeless. The Odessa Salvation Army shelter housed 39 people Tuesday night as the West Texas snowstorm hit the city, and the Army workers expect there will be more as the weather continues. Around 20 people were in the facility Wednesday morning after 7 a.m., while the others braved the weather and left to go about their day. Army workers figured it wouldn't be long before those who left would come back. People staying at the Salvation Army shelter usually have to come in around 5 p.m. at night and leave the next morning after breakfast and chores at 7 a.m. But with a winter storm, they are allowing people to stay in all day and get their 3 meals, as well as work with people on the intake process. Sean Brown, 47, is a veteran of the U.S. Marines and went through his own bout with homelessness before getting a job at the Salvation Army. Brown has custodial and maintenance duties while also checking in shelter guests and helping with meals. He says he gets paid for 6 hours of every day he works, but also volunteers his time. He's been working at the Army for almost a year, but feels like he doesn't do enough for those people in need. If we know the buses aren't moving, that's usually a day we'll have them stay here, Brown said. I wish the community would come together more because we could do more. We just don't have the room or the ability to do it, Brown said. The Army is asking the community for donations of deodorant, toothpaste, toothbrushes, unisex socks, bottles of shampoo and lotion, blankets, gloves, and unisex clothing, like underwear and shirts. Residents ate breakfast, did chores, and watched TV on Wednesday morning in the shelter. Because of the weather, they were allowed to take some smoke breaks a little closer to the building than usual. Dixie Harshman, 48, has been at the shelter for about 5 days. It's really cold, she said. I'm glad to be staying in. Harshman said she's been searching for her family in Odessa and her husband. I just want to talk to the family, make sure they're okay, and let my husband know that I love them very much. Harshman said that her belongings were stolen from her and that she was waiting on her IDs and birth certificate. If anyone wants to contact her, Harshman said, she can be reached at the shelter. Darla Johnson, 56, from San Antonio, has been in Odessa for about 10 years. Johnson said it's good that people got to stay inside Wednesday. She's been in the shelter for about 3 months while trying to get back on her feet. Cost of living here is still too high, she said. I'm still waiting for my housing on HUD. HUD is the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Johnson used to have an apartment and said when rent went up, she wasn't able to afford a one-bedroom on her cashier and secretary salary. She said she's been waiting for housing off and on for 10 years and that a one-bedroom that used to cost her $450 is now around $1,000. When you get down and out, sometimes it takes a lot to get back up. Retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Leonard E. Daniels, 54, is from New Orleans and moved to Odessa after Hurricane Katrina. He's lived in Odessa for 16 years. The Salvation Army has been a blessing for all of us here, Daniels said. We need somewhere to go to get out of the weather and need somewhere warm to be. As cold as it got with the rain and everything, that's when it really got bad for some of us, especially for some of the people I know who actually sleep outside. Dennis said after he moved to Odessa, he had a bout with substance abuse and violence and then jail. Daniels has been going to the Army for a year now. During the day, he'd usually go to the public library. He's been in touch with Veterans Affairs and has been enrolled in the HUD-VASH program, which is a partnership between the VA and HUD that helps low-income veterans receive a specialized housing voucher. He's waiting for his voucher to show up and said that the wait list is pretty long. Daniel said getting clean and the Salvation Army has saved his life and has helped him get back in touch with his wife and children. I'm not proud of my past. I'm not the perfect person, Daniel said. But going through the things I've gone through made me want to be a better husband and father. Ryan Anthony, 34, who moved to Odessa from an Appalachian area from Pennsylvania, said that he's just glad he's not buried underneath the snow. He's been in Odessa for over a year and was doing manual labor and construction jobs before falling on hard times. Being from the mountains, he was used to more snow in Pennsylvania, but said he certainly didn't miss it. Quick hits. Boat, RV, sport, and gun show. Discover Odessa has scheduled the annual Modessa Boat, RV, Sport, and Gun Show from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. There will be boats, jewelry, ranch toys, ladies' apparel, rhino linings, home decor, spices, hunting guides, family power sports, ATVs, watercrafts, and more. Admission is $7 for adults, $5 for seniors, $3 for children ages 3 through 11, and ladies free from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday. For information, call 770-5165 or email jramseynrg@aol.com. On the net, MedessaBoatShow.com. Fundraiser. Aphasia Center of West Texas and Concho Resources presents Sail Away With Us to Chocolate Decadence, The Love Boat, a Valentine's Voyage from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Friday at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena and Pavilion, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. There will be decadent chocolate desserts and gourmet savories, cruise ship casino, live and silent auctions, a raffle, photo opportunities at exotic ports of call, and dancing and live entertainment. Kathy Eastham is the 2020 Honoring Aphasia Center Sweetheart. The 1970s formal casual cruise attire, admired but not required. Go online to purchase or sponsor a table. on the net, bidpal.net/chocolate. Soup Cook-Off. The Martin County Convent Foundation Incorporated has scheduled the 31st annual Great Texas Soup Cook-Off from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. February 15th at the Martin County Community Center, 301 St. Teresa Street, Stanton. There will also be a dessert auction. Funds raised to ongoing restoration and preservation of the historic monastery. Registration forms are available online. The Midland-Odessa Symphony and Resident String Quartet has scheduled auditions for Concertmaster and for Principal Violin 2 on February 24th, location to be announced. Application deadline is Monday. Minimum requirements. Candidates must hold a degree in violin performance. Master's degree preferred. For more information, email personnel@mosc.org. Go online for application details. Spinal cord stimulator. To your good health for Thursday. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm an 83-year-old African-American female who is contemplating having a neurostimulator implanted in my back. I am a non-insulin diabetic, and my last A1C was 6.7. I had a laminectomy with fusion 15 years ago. What are the risks and prognosis? Dr. Roach writes, spinal cord stimulators have moderate effectiveness for people with persistent pain after surgery. In studies, stimulators were more likely to give significant pain relief than repeat surgery and were more effective than standard medical therapy, but the studies may not be applicable for your particular reasons for pain. Approximately 30% of people will have a complication, such as infection, movement or breakage of the electrical leads, and wound breakdown. They can rarely, less than 1% of the time, cause bleeding, which is an emergency since the spinal cord is a very dangerous place for bleeding. Spinal cord stimulators should be used only in people with severe pain, who are not getting good relief with other treatments, and with full understanding of the relatively high complication rate. People should also know that pain relief can wane over time. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Thursday. It is with sad and heavy hearts that we announce to you the passing of our dear mother, Ruby Joyce Allgood Bryant, age 85. She passed February 2nd in Odessa. She is preceded in death by her husband Ross, grandson Kelly Seeley, her parents J.H. and Annie Allgood, brothers Avery Allgood, Chester Allgood, and Delbert Allgood, sisters Mabel Mallow, Johnny Elmore, Pauline Kemp, and Wanda Bryant. She is survived by her daughter Gloria Seeley and husband Scott, sons Mike Bryant and wife Sharon, Chuck Bryant and Doug Bryant, 8 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, February 6th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Friday, February 7th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel, with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. The family requests all donations be made to the Alzheimer's Association or Focused Care of Odessa. To send family condolences, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Joe Tidwell, Jr. passed away peacefully at his home on February 3rd, surrounded by his family. He went to see his beloved wife, Dorothy, who passed away 14 years ago. Joe was born on November 21, 1929, in Breckenridge, Texas, to Joe Tidwell, Sr. and Virgil Kelly Livingston. He is preceded in death by both of his parents, 3 brothers, 1 sister, 2 granddaughters, Kelsey and Ariel. Joe is survived by his sons, John Tidwell of Gardendale, Tom Tidwell of Graham, and Joe Tidwell and daughter-in-law, Tricia, of Odessa. sisters Betty Turner and Barbara Staggs, 2 grandchildren, 1 great-grandchild, 7 great-grandchildren, and 3 great-great-grandchildren. Visitation is from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, February 7th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Graveside services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 8th, at Sunset Memorial Gardens. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Antonio Vila Mendoza, Jr., 65, of Odessa, died Saturday, February 1st, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Friday, February 7th, at St. Anthony Catholic Church. A rosary will be recited today, Thursday, at 7 p.m. A private cremation will follow after Mass. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. MCH uses a variety of ways to recruit, by Ruth Campbell. A combination of visiting schools, word of mouth, and social media helps Medical Center Hospital recruit physicians and nurses. Tina Leal, Vice President of Community and Physician Relations, said a lot of existing doctors provide help with recruitment. Leal added that there are 6 to 7 doctors who are part of the recruitment team and help vet physician candidates, which makes it easier for her because they know people who are working with candidates. They have people that they know that might be looking for a job, so they've been very, very helpful in doing that for us. That's kind of been one of our main things. We take a look at their CVs, their resumes. We look at that, making sure that the schools all check out, that they've graduated through an ACGME school and completed their residency or fellowship. And we then send out to other physicians who are part of the recruitment team, Leal said. ACGME stands for Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education. Leal said there are some specialties that are difficult to recruit because there are so few residents coming out of them, like ophthalmology and vascular surgery. Leal said they have started including spouses in the interview process. I actually took the initiative of actually touring the spouse. I'm born and raised here in Odessa, so I will actually tour them around Odessa, show them the different places, the schools, because that's what a lot of them want to know about, the schools. They want to know, where can I go shopping? What are the restaurants? So I've been showing them a lot of that. I think that's been very successful with the spouses because they feel like they're getting special treatment as well, Leal said. Before joining MCH 6 years ago, Leal said she was with Texas Tech as director and designated institutional officer. Then I transitioned to the hospital about 6 years ago. I worked in the medical staff office, working with 400-plus physicians, was a way for me to transition now to this position, Leal said. She added that she has seen physicians still working toward their specialty and those who are just starting their careers at the hospital. There is a lot of competition for physicians, but there is a lot of business, a lot of opportunities. This hospital, we support 17 other counties, so there are so many opportunities for these physicians. If they want the business, they've got it, Leal said. She noted that they are always trying to plan ahead. Leal said her calendar was booked through January and into February. We're lining up providers. We do at least 2 to 3 times a week, which is a lot, bringing in providers, doing interviews, and taking them and showing them around, so it's constant, Leal said. For instance, anesthesia, we advertise through gaswork.com. All these groups have these little areas, so we put ads out there to let them know we have 8 openings for CRNAs, Certified Registered Nurse Anesthetists, and then we have 1 or 2 of our CRNAs who help us out by word of mouth. They go on Facebook. They have their own CRNA group. They help us in advertising. That's been really great. We get in resumes or CVs constantly that way. She said the hospital also has worked with Merritt Hawkins, a recruiting firm, for help attracting the big specialties. Liao said MCH also works with Texas Tech to fill physician spots. I work with the Texas Tech PA, physician assistant group, to let them know we have some positions for the mid-levels or the allied health professionals, Liao said. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said they have taken a creative approach to filling openings for nurses. They will reach out to people who have applied in the past or that they have seen online that haven't applied but have put their resume out there. So we'll do a lot of cold calls. Human Resources really supports us with that. We go to all of the nursing schools every semester, and we talk to them about positions that they would qualify for in that particular semester. At their fourth semester, we go out there and we give them an incentive offer, Timmons said. We've put together a package to make coming to medical center a little bit more enticing, such as free meals for a year while they're working, free Mission Fitness membership for a year. We give them a scrub allowance. In that package, they get a new stethoscope. We have a housing stipend for them. And then, of course, depending on if they're an RN or an LVN, they have a particular sign-on bonus. We put all of that together in an effort to just make work as a whole a little bit more enticing, Timmons said. We've done a couple of job fairs. We did those to try that avenue just to kind of reach out to people across the area, and the new mail out different flyers, things like that. The other options we have for recruitment is, of course, every specialty within nursing has a professional website, so we will recruit on those within the nursing magazines, anything that's going to go out of state and nationwide to the nursing staff across the board, she added. A staffing advisory committee, required by law, helped devise the incentive package. They're the ones that actually have given us the majority of all the ideas, from a new stethoscope all the way to loan repayment. That's part of the package that, as long as you're working here, will help you with your student loans, Timmons said. Social media also has helped recruit nurses because it allows one person to reach many. They can also use agency staff and have partnered with STAT Staffing for when they need a variety of nurses. We also have the ability to use a headhunter for specific positions that we might be having a hard time recruiting for. For instance, surgical nursing, your critical care nursing staff, those people that you really want to recruit the experience because that's a growing need, Timmons said. Timmons said attracting nurses for labor and delivery is always difficult, and there is a growing trend of people not wanting to work in the general medical surgical floors and wanting to go straight into specialty care. If we hire you, we'll train you. It's always good to start on a med-surg floor, but not everybody does that. Some people go directly into critical care or surgical. It's all just really based on openings anymore than it is a ladder base, Timmons said. She said MCH has a close relationship with Texas Tech, University of Texas Permian Basin, and Odessa College. Within our nursing education department, we have a dedicated student liaison, so she is responsible for building those relationships, getting us into the doors, making sure those students are set for the clinical time that they need, and they're getting what they need out of those clinicals, Timmons said. Because if they're not having a good clinical experience, they're not going to want to work here, so we make a huge effort to meet with those students after clinical and find what worked, what didn't, who was helpful, who wasn't, so that we can coach those individuals and make sure that they're really getting what they need out of clinicals. She noted that MCH has about a 98% intern stay rate. We range from 20 to 30 of those in their semesters, and so that way we're training them up to be staff on top of their clinical time. It kind of puts them a step ahead in regard to knowing the system and developing relationships and things like that. So we do have a very good rate of keeping our interns that have actually been trained here at the hospital, Timmons said.
That's all for today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. You can also hear this program anytime online at recordinglibrary.org or by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555.